Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. If you want to hear the extended version of this episode, please join the Patreon campaign. This week, I'm talking to Sheila Marie about her book, Forensic Medium, The Power of the Unseen. Sheila is a professional forensic medium, healer, psychic and teacher. She founded the Sheila Marie Forensic Psychic Medium Academy of Intuitive Training and Sheila Marie Intuitive Arts. She has been a certified forensic medium since 1995 and has counselled and read for thousands of clients and students. Hi Sheila, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hello, namaste. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Forensic Medium, The Power of the Unseen. Was this a thing when you were like a child? You always had this thing with seeing dead people, or did it come on later in life?
Well, that's really interesting that you ask. Well, my mom always told me, like, as I was growing up, we were actually very Roman Catholic, and our family still is, which is fine. But my mom would always say, oh, she's psychic, because I would always say things, you know, and like give the answers to everything, even at a young 4 years old. And I would get so upset because I'd be like, why is she calling me that? Because I didn't want to go to HE double hockey sticks, you know? So I took offense to that many years. I would say my first experience was when I was in the fourth grade. I was about 10 years old when the hormones started coming in. I started, my dreams were really heightened, and everything around me I could sense, you know, and I had a couple of experiences. But it wasn't till I was in my early 30s where it became prominent.
Was there a time, was it you saw a ball of light while you were on the phone?
Yes, I did. I get so excited when you mention that because that changed my life. Yeah, so I was actually in my bedroom. I had, my daughter was with me. She was about 2 years old, and we live in like a contemporary Cape. So I was on the second floor. And I was talking to my sister-in-law on the phone, and all of a sudden it started thundering out, lightning. And I said, is it raining at your house? She's like, no. I'm like, oh, it is here. So I went over and I shut the window. And then when I shut the window, the rain stopped. I thought that was a little weird. So I lie down on the bed, and I want you to know, this is not me closing my eyes. This is me visually seeing all this. And so I'm sitting there, and my daughter's running around on the bed and stuff. And at the end of my bed, there's a door that goes into the bathroom. And all of a sudden, around 4 feet high, I see this ball of white light. And I want to say, you know, it's like maybe 6:30 at night, so it's dusk, you know? And all of a sudden, I said, oh my God. And it was the size of like a basketball. And I said, oh my God, my daughter's looking at it. And this is me on the phone. I'm like, there's something in my room. She's like, what? I'm like, there's something in my room. She's like, and I was trying to not talk because I didn't want whatever it was to see me talk. and it moved away, so I couldn't see it. Then it moved back again when I said that, to almost like look at me. But it wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't really taking the shape of a body. It was more of a ball. But I knew it was an entity or some type of energy. And my daughter's looking, and all of a sudden it picked up and flew across the room. And I said, oh my God, right? I was freaking out. But I wasn't scared. It was interesting because I felt like almost like it was like an experience, like like almost meeting the Virgin Mary. You know, that's the type of feeling it felt for me. And I was like, oh my God. So my sister-in-law said to me, oh my God, you're seeing spirits. And she was very, very psychic and into all that new age stuff. And I had never even gone to a psychic before in my life. I didn't believe in it. I was a skeptic. I didn't want anything to do with it. So that Christmas, I got a gift certificate from my sister-in-law, meet your spirit guide meditation class. And I'm thinking to myself, she's out of her flipping mind. I'm not going to do that. So I put the gift certificate in the counter, and a year later passes. And I said, oh my God, I better go to that class because I don't want to hear the wrath of my Italian sister-in-law. Right. So for giggles, I went to the class and I got in there. And now I have to tell you that when I was 11 years old, my dad was a police officer, but he also was a hypnotist too. And he used to work on hit and run cases. So he used to use me as a guinea pig and teach me meditation. So I was very comfortable with going in and getting in a meditative state. So when I get into this class, what does the lady do? She takes us into meditation. I'm like, oh, I know how to do this. This isn't psychic. I'm feeling very safe, you know? And she says to us, you need to trust God, whoever that is that you speak to in your higher mind, your higher consciousness, and give them the reins. I'm like, okay, I'll give Jesus and Mary the reins, and I'm going to give you the reins. If I'm not supposed to do this, don't let me see anything. Well, I got into that meditation and I saw so much. I came out of that meditation bawling my eyes out. I'm like, oh my God, because I, you know, 100% I trust Jesus and God, Mary. And I'm like, this is not bad. I'm not a bad person. This is love. This is pure love. And so that's how I started tapping into it, you know?
Do you think that ball of light was there to send you a message, or it was like an activation, or I'm not sure how to say it, almost like a spiritual kick up the pants, like saying, come on, get on with it?
Well, I'm blown away. When you just said that to me, I just got confirmation from spirit. So what that means is my whole body just tingled when you said that. So to me, that's confirmation. Absolutely. You know, you're the first person that's ever said that to me. And it most certainly was. It was like it was communicating with me and telling me it was safe, you know. But I had no idea what was going to happen afterwards, you know. And from time to time, I think about that experience. And you're exactly right. That happened for a reason. It got me on my life purpose. And it's really amazing because I think back to when I was a child. Really, everything in my life up until then was the foundation for what was coming. You know, I hadn't a clue, you know.
You were brought up as a Catholic, weren't you? So their viewpoint of psychics and mediums isn't very positive.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's really funny. So my parents divorced when I was four. My whole family was Catholic. And I was brought in and out of the Catholic Church, but my father raised me as Lutheran because of the divorce, this and that. And so I was a mixture of both. And then later on, years later, I became married and I became Catholic so I could be part of the clan, you know? But yes, it was very, and then I studied spiritualism, which is basically a religion of mediums, you know, connection. And then I study Buddhism, and now I'm studying Hinduism. So I coexist now because I feel that every religion has something good and love to give. It's all about love, ultimately, you know. But I resonate more with Hinduism now because that's all about higher consciousness and connection, and it's like I found my tribe, you know.
Does Hinduism talk about reincarnation?
Yeah, well, they talk about the connection. Well, actually, it's not even a religion. You know, it's a philosophy is what it is. It's a philosophy of life and connection. And it's about your true existence, your inner light, your energy, and how it continues, you know, and how this is not our only space. And yes, they do. They come back. And this is why, you know, it's important for practicing Hinduism is not to kill an ant, not to kill a cow, because it could be their past relative, you know?
I heard you tell a story about visiting, is it King Philip Woods?
Oh, yes, the Bambino story. Or, yeah, well, I'll have to tell you before that. So the King Philip Woods in, so this is what happened.
Okay.
So I had a studio in the mill in Medway, Massachusetts, and I would get calls, you know, and I got a call from this historian from Sudbury. And he said, could you come out with a couple of us from the historical society on the side every Sunday and come out to Sudbury and Concord? Now, that's where the Revolutionary War began, out that area. Okay. In Boston, in Massachusetts, in the United States. So there's a lot of energy there. There's a lot of spare, this and that. But Sheila didn't do so well in school. She was more of an artistic student. So she really didn't know much about history, which was actually a good thing for me. So I said, sure. So they said, come out in the fields with us and we'll want you to go in your head and tell us what you see. And I said, oh, okay, this will be fun. And at that time, nobody knew in my life that I was studying mediumship. I was tapping into my intuitive side. And I would do it on Sundays, you know? So every Sunday, I went out to this field, and one of them was in the King Philip Woods. And actually, it was really interesting because they were doing a documentary with me by this point. And we get into this area, and there's this, apparently, I found all the information out later. So what happens is I'll walk into the woods and I'll tell them all of my story, what I'm seeing from spirit. And I was getting songs and everything. I was taking them back. I kept on hearing, life is a highway. I want to ride it all night long. Apparently, the highwaymen were there. You know, I was getting all kinds of stuff from spirit. So anyway, we ended up doing a documentary on this King Philip Woods and the Revolutionary War and King Philip himself, the Indian French War and all that. But what I didn't realize is one of the men, he was looking for, his name was Kevin, nice guy. And he was looking, searching for many years for the Babe Ruth piano. And so they had built up a trust with me. And I think that this was the whole idea of what they wanted to do in the beginning, but because they kind of tricked me, but I ended up giving them more information than they expected. So anyways, we went to this, all of a sudden one Sunday, they brought me to this pond and it was just three of us, me, Lee Swanson, who was a historian as well, and Kevin Kennedy. And we went out to this pond and in my head, all of a sudden I saw a flash of the Green Monster. And the Green Monster is Fenway Park in Boston, okay? And I said, oh, Kevin, this is that baseball thing. I said, I want nothing to do with this. Because you have to remember, nobody knew that I was a medium. And I was very living in the political world as a police officer. Actually, I wasn't a police officer at the time, but my husband was, my father was. My whole life was very political. And I said, if anyone knew what I was doing, they would just like, he's gone off the rocker, you know? So I said, please don't tell me anybody. He's like, okay, just give us 10 minutes. I said, all right. So I went in, I stood on this hill and I picked up this stick and I saw in my mind, I saw a flash of nautical marks and spirit gave it to me and I gave it to them. And then 10 minutes later, I said, okay, let's keep working. So we started working with the historical stuff again. Well, I didn't know it, that they had tricked me because they had a permit for the pond and they had state drive divers the next day lined up to go search for my nautical marks. And the Environmental State Police had been looking for 30 years for Babe Ruth's piano in this pond with zero visibility. And I had not a clue. So next thing I know, I'm being told that they found the veneers of the pond, of the Bambino's piano. There's helicopters out there. This news went worldwide to India, Japan, I was devastated. I wanted to crawl under a rock, you know? And it was the universe way of saying, Sheila, you're coming out today. And so this is how I got into forensics. Next thing I know, I got a knock on the door from agents. And could you help us with this criminal case? Could you help us with this homicide? I'm thinking, okay, sure. So that's how I became a forensic medium. And I didn't search for it. It was like my life purpose was unfolded in front of me, you know? So that's what happened.
With King Philip Woods, did you get any Revolutionary War stuff coming through? Any images of soldiers or anything there?
I sure did. Oh, my God. It was amazing. We were out there for a couple of months in these woods. And we were in the rain. I mean, I would come out of there, it would be like 16. I'm not even exaggerating. There'd be 16 ticks on me, wood ticks on me from the rain and stuff. And that's how thick the woods were. And yeah, it's amazing because everything is vibration in a record, you know? And so like right now, as we're talking, I'm seeing flashes of what I saw, you know? And I remember the first, when I first got there, they covered the rocks and I always have an assistant with me. that takes care of me in case I trip or something like that, you know, but they don't tell me what's going on, but they make sure I'm okay. And my friend Donna, she was actually a student. She was helping me, and they covered all the rocks, so I wouldn't know where we were, the names on everything. And all of a sudden, in my mind's eye, I saw this guy, and he looked like kind of like George Washington, you know, with the white hair, this and that. And all of a sudden, I said, "Oh my God, I'm going to just call him Georgie." So Georgie was taking us everywhere. Turns out it was George Washington. And I had not a clue. And we went to this tavern. Like I was telling you, we walked to this tavern. And basically, you're not seeing anything. All you're seeing is stones everywhere and dirt, you know. And I was, I remember this is really cool, actually. I kept on seeing this guy. And he was like, honestly, I'm really not good at history, but he looked like someone from the South, okay, in a Southern war in the United States and in military time, revolutionary time, and he had a peg leg. And so I kept on calling him Woody, you know, peg leg, whatever. Well, turns out that this guy, this peg leg, and I was reciting our poetry and everything, he was a real guy. And that was his name, peg leg. I couldn't believe it. And so it was really kind of cool. Some of the things that what they would do is they would ask me questions. What are you seeing? What about this, this and that? Because they wanted to know about certain people buried, this and that. And they were working with the Smithsonian. It was really kind of cool. But yeah, and I even one point I saw like Indians and stuff. And it was amazing. It was just amazing. And I was baffled. They were baffled. And one time, they actually said, "Okay, Sheila," they took me on the edge of the woods. They said, "Now you tell us where we should go." I said, "What?" Because they were taking me before. I said, "Okay." So spirit was showing me. All of a sudden I'm seeing these rocks. I'm like, so what they were doing is they were priming me to find things. And I'm like, "Oh, go to the rock. It's to the left, you know, and then there's a tree. It's split in half. Sure enough, this is where it was. Go 4 feet." You know, this is what spirit was showing me. And we ended up finding a well in the ground made by the Indians 100 something years ago, and that they had put in the ground. It was really kind of cool. It had like rocks around it, and it was in the ground, and it was the size of like maybe 2 feet wide, you know. But we ended up finding that, so that was really cool.
Was there a time where you had to sort of tell your husband this is what you wanted to do, and that you just had to do it?
Oh my gosh, yes. So my husband at the time was very skeptical, non-believer, whatever. You have to understand, he was big in the police force, so everything socially had to be perfect, you know. And it's looked, in where I'm from in the world, it's looked for, if you're connecting or doing anything psychic, you're a witch, because of the Salem witch trials and everything in Salem, Massachusetts, this and that. So it's frowned upon if you're connecting, you know. So I came home from that class, that Meet Your Spirit Guide class, and I said, "This is what I have to do." He goes, "What do you have to do?" I said, "I have to do mediumship." He goes, "What the H double hockey sticks is that?" And I said, "You know, like psychics and reading." He goes, "Oh my God." I said, "You know what? If you have to divorce me, it's okay. I understand. But if I will die if I don't teach people how to connect. And he's like, "What?" I go, "I have to teach people how to connect. Everyone's able to connect. This is not voodoo. This is not bad. This is just who we are." It was so strong in me. I gave up my whole political life, you know, and friends, this didn't want to be friends with me anymore. And I was still the same Sheila. I hadn't changed or anything. All that I was doing was connecting to my inner light system. And of course, people judge this and that because they're just not open to it. They're not understanding it. But that's the reason why I'm on this mission, to teach everyone to connect with their inner light system, because it's who you are. It's a part of who you are. That inner, everything that you're searching for in the outer world is already in the inner world that will connect you to that vibration of that frequency of connection. And that's how it came with me. It was like my life purpose. I'm divorced now, but you know, that's not the reason why I'm divorced, but you know, I'm sure it played a part in it too, but you know, that's okay. This is, you know, life, right?
You mentioned the inner light system there. Is this something you teach?
Yeah, so it's I kind of coined the name inner light system. So basically, it's I start off with meditation. Yes, and I teach the inner light system. And what that is to me, like another system within yourself of connection. And it also has, I don't know if you're familiar with like the clairsees, clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient, yeah. And all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so it's basically similar to that, same thing. It's just part of your system and who your being is, you know, and that inner light system is, you could also connect it as energy and vibration in, within, and around your being. Your, and when I say being, your body, you know, your astronaut suit and your soul. So your Atman, your soul, your is your inner light system, you know? Yeah, so that's, so basically it's tapping into that. So like if you go into meditation, if say you want to come to one of my classes, and I encourage everybody to learn this because this is who you are. You know, we all dream at night. Well, most of us do. We all dream and you're already doing it already. Everyone has intuition. It's just a matter of tapping into that. And there's another system, like, so when you see visually with your eyes open, there's another sight inside your inner light system where you see visually, kind of like a daydream, you know? So there's a whole nother system inside you that's a different feeling as well, you know? You know, some people might get tingling or they might, like, there's different parts of, how do I say this, psychic energy that you can read, like psychometry. If you're reading something, you get an inner feeling, you know, and it's a different type of feeling than you would from your day-to-day living. You see? You understand?
So that's how you would trust it. You wouldn't sit there thinking, oh, it's just my imagination.
Right. So you trust it. So in order to tap into your inner light system, you have to have complete trust from your higher power, your higher existence, your God, your Allah, whoever that is, or just the universe itself. I use universe as a term many times because universe is vibration and frequency, and it's an interconnectedness, you know? And so it's important to tap into this because this is who you are as a being, you know? These bodies are just our astronaut suits. Our Atman, our inner light system is within us, you know, our soul. And when these bodies don't work, our soul still continues. It goes to that frequency of energy, you know, and there's many dimensions. It's very much science, actually, you know, from but it's a beautiful, I want to call myself an energy junkie because it's the highest form of love and connectiveness that there is. It's all pure love and it's so deep. It's beautiful, you know, and I can't explain it. Once you start tapping into who you are, you see things differently. You know, there's no such thing as time, man-made time. You know, we're so hard on ourselves as human being in this experience. And I tell everyone that your life is just one dream. Don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Just do the best you can. There's plenty of time because there's no such thing as time. You know, you may not conquer everything in this body, but you will. You know what I mean? So just be conscious of and just kind of live in the moment, you know, and that's hard to do, you know, because we're so conditioned from society to live a different way, you know.
So you do forensic mediumship. How is that different to other mediumship you might do?
So let's see. So forensic mediumship is, so mediumship is, let me say, so being a psychic is someone who can read the energy in the room, read the person. Sometimes they'll see flashes. And what I mean by that is spirit, meaning the universe will give them a flash or a daydream to visualize. And sometimes, you know, that's what psychic, you know, but a medium is someone who gets into that space, that inner light system, observes a spirit and has communication back and forth with that spirit, has a conversation back and forth. So they can give you information as you go and you're seeing that person in a spiritual sense. Like for me, I see a lot in my, I want to call it my inner light system in my meditative state, you know, but my eyes are open, you know. for a forensic medium. So basically what that is, I receive data and information, you know? So what happens to me is I will say, let's say for instance, someone will come and they'll say, I'll say to them, they'll say they need information. I said, okay. So what will come is I'll say, give me the person's first name. And so what will happen to me, my body is a channel for the spirit world. So the spirit world comes through me and I'll draw a face. And let me tell you, I can't even draw an apple in the daytime, but I'll channel the energy where I'm allowing my body in the universe to use me to draw a face, you know, or I may draw maps. I draw maps a lot of times. It mostly looks like squiggly marks here and there, but I can decipher what it is afterwards. And so basically for me, I can speak from my experience as a forensic medium. It's data and information and location, you know, and it's not all. A lot of people say, oh, you work in missing persons. I do, not all the time. I do a lot of forensics. A lot of agents or families may call because they need information, and I'll get it that way as well. So it's basically me working with my guides, my higher power, my higher consciousness, and asking them for information and then using me as a channel and then showing me, you know. And sometimes when someone comes to me, the reading can be, it could be a reading. Like I might receive everything in a reading style where I would speak to the spirit and talk vice versa. A lot of the times that doesn't happen. I'll have, let's say an agent come in, we need to find this location. This is the first name. I said, okay. So I'll get all the information. I'll draw maps. And then I'll say to them, give me a few days, because I also receive dreams. And that's something that how I knew this was my life purpose, because one of my first experience, I always talk about this story because I'm still blown away over it. I had never received, everyone will say, oh, I had a dream last night. What does this mean? You know what I mean? Well, this was different. I was married at the time and I had an agent come in that gave me a name. And I said, okay, don't tell me anything else, because if I don't know anything, I'm not thinking it subconsciously or in my mind. And that's another thing that I teach my students, is how to not think, because once you think, you're screwed, because you're subconsciously thinking it and creating it in your mind. And I teach them how not to do that. So anyways, he gives me a name and I said, okay, give me 2 weeks and we'll make an appointment. I will talk again. Okay. So that night I go to sleep. Next thing I know, I'm in my dream and poof, all of a sudden it's like football lights turn on and I'm standing and I'm looking beneath me and I see a little boy's head and I'm following him through a city and he's showing me all the, oh my God, I can see it right now. All this information, these files of his crime, what had happened to him. So I woke up, I screaming, and my husband was, hey, I think you're having one of those dreams. I'm like, oh my God, right? So I wrote everything down as I saw it. This happened for 2 weeks straight. Every night I had a dream. I couldn't believe it. Now, I wasn't asking. By the second week, I prayed to God. I said, please, no more dreams. I can't sleep anymore, because I was really getting scared and depressed because I was feeling everything from the little boy. And so I had enough information. And the agent came in with the family, this and that. And I said, well, I'll tell you what my dreams were. If this makes any sense to you, you can tell me at the end, because still I have no idea what this name means to them or anything. I don't even know if it's their spirit or not. You know, I'm taking a chance saying, okay, well, I hope they understand this, because they're going to think I'm crazy after this, you know. The lady's crying, this and that, blah, blah, blah. They understood everything. Turns out the boy was kidnapped. It was, and this happened over 30 years ago. So this was a cold case, but they had reopened it. And then next thing I know, they understood everything. They couldn't believe it. And then they told me the story afterwards. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, wow. And I'll have to tell you, I'm not telling you the names and everything only because all the cases that I've worked on over 400 cases and been a lead in most of them. And I don't speak about the names and that for protection for me and my family, and because those families are still out there. You know, a case, even when it's closed, is still alive, you know. And it's a dangerous world we live in. So anyways, next thing I know, they said they'd kind of come back with me, because they had three people or whatever lined up. And I said, it's this guy. This is the guy. Because I had drawn a picture of him. I seen him in my dreams and everything. And I said, it's this guy, 300%. They're like, no, it's not. I'm like, oh, no, it is. Well, turns out it was. And he's been, he's in jail for life now because they got a confession out of him. So unbelievable. Who knew that was going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So so that was one of my first experiences. I was like, wow, you know, so that's how I knew that I was in my life purpose because I was getting dreams. I didn't ask for dreams. Who asked for dreams? You know what I mean? So that's what happens. And every now and again, I'll get dreams, but not on all my cases, you know, but spirit is, I don't actually look for, my cases. I let the universe bring them to me because there's so many out there, you know, and I know that the universe knows what I'm capable of working on and what they and what they want me to work on. You know, I always say I'm working for the universe. I'm working for the spirit. You know what I mean? I'm not working for me. So I give them the reins in that. And that's part of connecting to your mediumship, to your inner light system, is letting go and letting the reins be taken by your spirit guides, your higher consciousness, you know, the universe, because that's part of it, you know.
Have you ever wondered what happens after we die? In my new book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, I share 30 incredible stories of people who were clinically dead, some with no heartbeat, no brain activity, yet returned with knowledge that was later verified. These accounts challenge everything we think we know about consciousness and the afterlife. It's available now as an ebook, paperback, and audiobook on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other good bookshops. Again, it's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, and I hope you check it out. I read in the book that you were working on a cold case of a missing boy, and you sat, I think, with the mother and said, right, I'm going to sit here for 2 hours. Don't say anything. Is that what happened? You just sat up each other?
Yeah. So what happened with that, I believe that with the one in the book is, yeah. So the mother came in, I said, and I do this frequently to many people. And actually I even do it online now too, since COVID. And I'll say, okay, don't tell me anything. Just tell me the person's first name. And I'll sit there in front of them. Actually, I like to do this on all my cases first, you know, and I take paper, like computer paper, and I just ask spirit, okay, spirit, show me what I need to do, what I need to write, what I need to draw. And I just start drawing, and I'll usually make maps. And I'll draw words, this and that. And then I'll see images and I'll draw everything in front of the person. Yeah. And so this woman particularly, I drew everything. It was about, you know, for a while, and I sat there and I like them to see what I'm doing. And I, you know, tell them not to say anything because I want them to know that I'm working for them, and I'm working really hard, you know. I'm giving myself, my life, my energy to them so I can help them, you know. And I did this, and the woman was crying. She understood everything. So yeah, so that happened. Yeah, but that happens a lot. You know, I do that often. And then sometimes what will happen is we'll decipher the case. So we'll get all the information, and it might just be the beginning of what they need. They might need a little more. So then I'll ask spirit a question, and then I usually ask spirit to give me the information in two different ways that I'm not thinking. So I know I'm not creating it subconsciously. And that's how I get it. Yeah, it's really kind of cool, you know. And I do mentorship. And when I teach mentorship for my advanced students, it's just a matter of everyone can do this. You know, some of it's a calling. For me, it was a calling. You know, it was like my life purpose. But everybody's capable of doing it at different levels if they tap into it. Maybe not so much for instance, but the tapping into the inner light system, because it's who we are as beings, you know. And that's why I chose to teach, because I'm like, shame on me for not teaching people, because this will heal them. You know, there's a great healing that happens with connection. You can heal yourself because you understand your being, you understand your existence, you understand why people are going through what they're going through around you. You can understand and look outside of the box, because you're looking into the, I don't want to say the air, because when I think of air, I think of nothingness, but it is a nothingness. And what I mean, it's that in between, it's that, that ether, you know, it's the sky, you know, it's everything, it's energy, it's bits and everything in everything. Everything unseen is where all the information is. And is where, and it's so powerful in what we need to exist on a daily level, because our inner thoughts are energy and we are intuitive towards other people's energy and everything around us. But we lose that as we become socialized, because we learn to not trust, and we learn that that negativity and that doubtfulness and that mistrust blocks it. You know, so a lot of times when I'm in class teaching people, I'm teaching them to how to let go of the fear, you know, and let go of the fear so they can trust their higher power, so they can connect to the inner light system. And a lot of people, they don't want to be mediums. They just want to learn to connect, and they should, because you can use it all in your whole life, you know, in your business, in your life, in your relationships with yourself, with your family. And I mean, it's beautiful, you know.
So when you do a mediumship reading, you maybe sit opposite somebody and you say things and they give you feedback. But when you're doing the forensic reading, when they're sitting opposite you for 2 hours, you don't want any feedback. Is that because on one side it helps, but with the other, the forensic, it doesn't help?
Well, I'll be honest with you. When I do readings, I ask them not to say anything till I'm done. I do the same thing. So when I give a reading for... a psychic reading, what I do a little different than other mediums. I'll sit with someone, even whether it's online or in person, and I'll say, okay, I'm going to say a prayer. What I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you who I'm, what I'm seeing around you. I'm going to get all the information. I'm going to give you a message, and then we can talk. That's how I do it, because it keeps me clear. So I'll go in, say I'm seeing a spirit. He's an older man, you know, he's in his 50s, this and that. He's, you know, good big belly, he's wearing suspenders, you know, keep going. And then I'll get information about his life that the sitter will understand. And usually by the time they start crying, then I know to go right into the message, and I'll ask for a message and they'll give me a message for that person. So usually when I sit, I get usually 1 to 3. And I want you to know that I would love to give you a reading on the side for free, because all the hosts, I always let them know that. So you have a free reading coming to you, by the way.
That's really nice. And
yes. Oh, absolutely. And so so that's what I do, is I go around them and tell them, and usually I get 1 to 3. Let's just put it this way. Everybody has spirit around them, no matter what. Okay. So I usually pull 1 to 3 spirits in for one reading, just because you can only talk about one person for so long, and usually a reading's a half an hour long, you know. So I usually do that, and so I encourage, that's what I do, you know. But I don't have them talk in the beginning, but there'll be a point where I'll say, "Do you understand what I'm talking about?" And they might say, "Well, I understand this, but I don't understand that." I said, "Okay, so let's go in and ask more," and then they'll give me more information. You know what I mean? So after the reading is stopped, then we go back in and get more, and sometimes not. And then sometimes the people have questions and I go in and ask them and everything. Like I do another type of reading where it's just a psychic reading, I call it. So I'll take out my oracle cards. I'll do a general reading on them from the cards and what if I see flashes in my head. But then the next part of the reading, they can ask me anything and I'll tell them exactly what I see and I'll interpret it in front of them. So if they have questions about their love life, about their relationships or work or whatever, I actually have several multimillionaires and that are on concierge. So they'll call me and they'll say, "Sheila, like, hey, we have a question. Should we do this deal?" And they'll tell me things, this and that. And I'll tell them what spirit's seeing. Then they'll make their conscious choice, you know? So there's all different ways. But for me, I like to give all the information first because it helps me not to think, you know?
Yeah, I see. You don't want your logic and your analysis to get in the way. You want it to flow.
Absolutely, yes. And because that is the trick, you know, most of all my beginning students, sometimes advanced too, we're human and we get in our own way because of that thinking, because that's what we have to do on a daily basis is think, you know? So it's, I told them, I said, there's no reason to be nervous. Just go, just be open, and you have to not think at all. So training them not to think, it's really funny. Sometimes when I get so deep into the reading, they'll ask me a question like on a civilian question. And I'll be like, I can't answer it because I'm not thinking at all. Like completely the thinking process is gone, you know? It's really funny.
Somebody comes to you, I think you mentioned in this, in your book, it's something like a person goes to a legitimate psychic and asks if her husband is cheating on her. But is there something there you might think, I can't say? What if it's true and then they get divorced, or it's not true and then I get sued? Is there stuff where you might, what do you call it? You watch what you're saying to cover yourself.
I understand what you mean. Well, that's really funny because, you know, spirit will show you everything. And I always tell my students, there is a way of saying things to get the point across. Where, like, in other words, say there's a grieving mother in front of me. Let me tell you, I have this many times. It's very sad. That's the hardest thing about being a medium, forensic mediums. You have a lot of parents that have come to you in suicides, this and that. And so anyway, so as I'm visualizing her son being hanging from the ceiling in the closet, and I'm thinking to myself, and I'm thinking at this point, how am I going to say this without keeping things calm in the room and not having her go into deep depression, you know? So I said, well, they're showing me a rope. You know, you understand this, right? Yes, I understand it. Okay. I'm seeing hanging. Do you understand? I'm seeing like hangers in the closet hanging. You understand? Okay. You know what I'm saying? So there's ways around, like I want to be honest, but at the same time, I let them tell me too. You know what I mean? But as far as, you know, it's good to be honest. I always am honest. I tell everyone, don't make anything up. You know what I mean? But when it comes to like that, you know, I always tell them, I'm honest. You know, this is what spirit's showing me. And spirit's showing me that possibly you may not be together, you know, or if you choose this, you know, it's all about what they choose and that. So I don't worry about that because it's all about choice as well. You know what I mean? And if they choose to, I don't know, I guess I'm trying to think. I have so many people that come to me about relationships, but I'm just honest with them. And I tell them like what the cards show me, this and that. And then, they'll ask me, like, I've had people say to me, people want you to be honest is what I find too. You know, this is what I'm seeing, and it's what matter of what they want to do with it. You know what I mean?
Do you ever have spirits come through for somebody and your client doesn't want to hear from them?
I have. Actually, I have in the past. Yes, I have. They'll say, well, I don't want to talk with them, this and that. And I said, okay, well, I just want to let you know that they're here and they do have a message for you. But, you know, that is their choice. And if they don't want me to, I'll move on to another spirit. But what I find interesting is sometimes they do, even though they don't want to. They're like, at the end, they'll be like, well, could you tell me what they wanted to say? You know what I mean? And there's a lot of healing, too. And a lot of times is what I try to tell clients and people is when we go in, we're enlightened beings. We're beings of light that are in these bodies, you know? And when we leave these bodies, we go into energy. We're already existing in that energy. You know, we're not living. A lot of things people think, oh, I die, I go into the spirit world. No, no, no. You're already in the spirit world. Okay. You already are. And when we go to this higher consciousness, this higher vibration of transition, from my experience and what I've seen in the spirit world is these spirits are enlightened. Even if they're bad, they're enlightened. And I find sometimes they come back because they want to make things right with what they've done, you know? So it can be very healing for some people, you know?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, if you're ever on a forensics case and it's the murderer that comes through.
Oh, the murderer? Let's see. Let me think here. Well, I've had like double, triple homicides where they kill. Yeah. And sometimes, what they do is tell everybody, you know, you're protected with white light. You know, you're protected with the energy of love. Like, I don't dabble into the darkness. You know, there is dark in the world. People that are living can be very dark because they're choosing that, you know. And I'm sorry, what was the question again?
Oh, it was just whether like, a murderer will come through when you're doing forensics case.
Yeah, so I've worked on a couple like that, like a double suicide and stuff like that, and they're enlightened, you know what I mean, and they're not in the darkness, you know what I mean. And I'm trying to think what will happen. Let's see. I'm trying to go back into. I don't know why, but they come back to help. You know, sometimes, it's really interesting that you say this because I'll be honest with you, and I always am, that when I work on cases, my guides, meaning my higher power, my higher consciousness is leading me. So I'm the channel. You see what I'm saying? So my higher consciousness will show me the information. So in other words, I'm not directly calling, like I might see the person who murdered them, but I'm not communicating with them. My guides are, my higher consciousnesses, and that's the information that I'm receiving. Does that make sense?
And there must be times in these forensic cases you come across some really horrible, disturbing stuff. So do you do something to prepare yourself before you start these cases?
I do. I'm always protecting myself. I have my little rituals. I ask my spirit guides to protect me with white light. I do sage and prayer, you know, mostly prayer and conversation with my higher power, my spirit guides, and to use me as a conduit for light, you know what I mean? And always protect me, even when I'm sleeping at night, you know? And so I always, it's really deep prayer and communication. That's where your power is with prayer, you know? And not necessarily specific prayers, but speaking and communicating back and forth with my guides, with the higher existence in the universe to protect me for good. You know what I mean? Because I know I'm always being protected. You know, it's the reason why you and I are speaking. You know what I mean? I'm sure there's more to come, you know? And I look at it like everything has its purpose, but I'm light and there is darkness. So you have to be conscious of that. And sometimes the darkness will smile at you right in the eyes, you know, right in your face, you know? So, yes, I do protection, and basically it's prayer. And my whole life, you know, it's really interesting. Years ago when I first started, you know, I would work every Sunday. I would drive an hour away to go to a place, and I would do readings, and I'd drive an hour back, and then I'd become the mom, and I would never be the medium at home, only at that place. And then all of a sudden, I ended up with my own meditation studio later on, and this and that, and it became my whole life. So my whole life is mediumship now. Everything I do is mediumship. My relationships, everything around me. So it's interwoven, intertwined now with everything I do. So I'm protecting myself daily in the morning and at night. You know what I mean? So it's, but when a specific case comes in, I do protection as well. Always when I work, I protect myself, but it's constant too, you know?
And I suppose there can be an emotional side to it as well. But is there a thing when you're a police officer, you come across this stuff and you learn how to deal with your own emotions around it?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I look at it. I never could understand why I chose to become a police officer. And I know I needed the money at the time. It was an easy in because I had family, this and that, that were police. And this was the reason why, because yes, I was actually, I'm an investigator, certified investigator. I'm a certified rape investigator. I worked on a lot of rape cases, this and that. And so a lot of crimes, a lot of domestic violence. I actually had that in my personal life as well. So a lot of things had happened to me that primed me for this, you know? So it was kind of amazing. Yeah, at one point I was in a bad relationship where I was abducted, but I got away. And I'm one of the survivors. So I said, wow, it's amazing how spirit used me now. And I get cases like that. And I'm like, wow. And it's like almost like I can understand everything from a different perspective because of that, you know, and it helps me on my cases. So, but what I do also, when I do cases is I make a report and everything. Like it becomes like it is an investigation how I do my work too. You know, I have a process, a blueprint of what I teach my students to do, but part of it is making reports and everything like that and working with agencies or agents and families or police departments and stuff like that. So I teach them all that logistics too, you know. So there's different parts of being just a forensic medium. It's not just about the reading itself, but it's everything combined, you know.
So there's a thing where you communicate with spirits where you're doing the forensic work and they reveal clues and images and all sorts of things. But some people might ask, well, if they can do that, why don't they just tell you the murderer's name and their address?
Well, they can, and they have. It's true. And, well, what I do is, well, for me, I like to live in the moment. You know what I mean? So I like, well, yeah, they do. Sometimes they do. Like, they'll ask me, like, that's what happened, like, in that case. Like, I literally drew the person's face and everything. And then they showed me a lineup and I said, this is him. This is what I saw, you know? And I didn't get that. Sometimes I don't get people's names, you know? It's just a matter of what spirit gives me, but I'll ask, you know? And not 9 times out of 10 do I get names. This is unfortunate with me, probably because I'm thinking deep subconsciously, you know, because I get nervous. But sometimes it just blurts out of my mouth like I have Tourette's. And I'm like, oh, do you understand Andrew? They're like, what? I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's his name. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, there you go. So, yeah. So what was the question again? Of names, right? Oh, how do you, oh, yeah. Oh, it's really interesting. I do get a lot of signs. And but sometimes they need that. For me, like when I'm working with the forensics, I find that the information that I'm receiving, they need anyways. You know what I mean? It's almost like I could go in and find everything exactly where they are, this and that. But it's all like all the information getting up into it that they need as well, you know?
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book is Forensic Medium, The Power of the Unseen. And people can get that on Amazon.
Yes, they can go on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. They can go on Amazon. You can buy it there, the paperback. And also there's an ebook as well on Barnes & Noble. Or you could just go to the book site itself. It's forensicmedium.com. And that links you in with my website, SheilaMarieMedium.com as well, if you want to come for a class participate in an intimate virtual psychic experience, which is basically a group reading, as well as I do readings online.
Fantastic. And thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. You have a wonderful day. You take care.
This week, I was talking to Sheila Marie about her book, Forensic Medium, The Power of the Unseen. If you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. My book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is available on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, ebook, and audiobook. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review. And be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.